Broadcasting and streaming worldwide from the Golf Club Studios, it's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
Hi, Danielle. It's Ben Crenshaw.
Ben Crenshaw, we've got so much to talk about when it comes to golf course design today. But just stand by here. First off, I'm going to do some tee times. We've got at the Makani Golf Course. This is in Kona. There's a 9:40, 11:10, a 12 o'clock. The IBEW, they're out on the golf course. Makale, they've got an 8:36, a 9:10, 11:56. And Pele's girls are at the Volcano Golf Club. Now, Pele has shut down for, I think this is the 26th eruption. And boy, 1,000 feet into the air. It's just incredible fountaining to be seen. So, unfortunately, it won't be seen that well unless she starts up again today. There's an 8:32, a 9:24, and a 10:48. Poipu, 9:40, 10:20, 11:30. The Weekend Warriors are on the golf course. And Nurses Golf 2, not just the doctors on Wednesday. Kauai Lagoons has a 10:20. Kapolei, we don't have any tee times there, but Pearl at Kalaau'au, there's an 8:48, a 9:36, and a 10:28. Hawaii Kai has a 9:42. Turtle Bay, 9:36, 10:18. The Wind Warriors are out. May you all hit the sweet spot every time. We've got a lot going on. Royal Hawaiian Golf Course has an 8:32, a 9:36, and a 10 o'clock. At, Wailea on the Gold Course, 9:40, 9:50. The Maui MGA, they're on the golf course. Emerald has a 9:50. Make that a 9:40, a 10:20. And the Blue Course has a 9:50 and a 10:50. And we've got Ron Syrak joining us, Aaron Straub, the Senior Vice President of Operations, Concert Golf Partners, Forrest Richardson, ASGCA, Principal Golf Course Architect, President, Past President, American Society of Golf Course Architects, and kicking it off, Jeff Shackelford. He is author of Golf Architecture for Normal People. That would be me. Golf designer, a Rustic Canyon Golf Course. And you can find him at jeffshackelford.com or right here in the clubhouse after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
The Golf Club is brought to you by Aloha Power Equipment, your landscape superstore. Weed it, whack it, mow it, blow it. We put power at your fingertips. The Honolulu Sign Company. Branding, banks, shopping centers, businesses, and hotels since 1939. Claude Brousseau. Master teaching professional at the Wailea Golf Academy. The Aloha Section PGA. Teach your children to play golf. The gift that lasts forever.
Jeff Shackelford is author, publisher, The Quadrilateral. 13 books, I think it is, but I'll have to double check with him. I sometimes see 11, I sometimes see 13. A year-round newsletter that, one of the best newsletters. You really have to go find Jeff Shackelford online because he sums everything up. An independent voice devoted to all things Grand Slam and the best cup events. Jeff was the senior writer for Golf Week and USA Today. He's worked for all of the golf publications, a long list. Welcome into the clubhouse, Jeff.
Danielle, good to talk to you again.
It's good.
How things in Hawaii?
Oh, they're beautiful. As you know, with Pele giving us incredible vistas to look at. She's just amazing. Mm. It's been going on for years now. And she shuts it down, starts back up again. But I want to ask you about the future of golf in America, how golf lost its way in the 21st century, and how to get it back. Now, that was published in January of 2004. And were you talking about the future of golf in America, like in recreational golf or professional golf?
Oh, everything. The whole package. Wow, thank you for reminding me that book's 25 years old. we've solved some of the issues that were brought up in it, but we have several of the issues still lingering. But it was written at the time because I saw a lot of things going a certain direction that weren't great. And unfortunately, some of those things panned out. And like I said, some things have, I'm not going to say been corrected, but they've definitely, the course changed and for the betterment of the game.
Yeah. Okay. I see. I'm going to go straight to something I was holding on to for a little while. Pace of play. Pace of play.
Yeah.
On the PGA Tour and pace of play on the LPGA. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Somehow I've lost Jeff. It's a terrible
moment. Okay, well, I'm here.
Somehow I've lost myself. Oh, there we go. I'm sorry.
There
that
we
was
go.
My fault. My microphone and plug disconnected. How rude.
Aha.
Aha. Says the blind lady over here. thank you, Nani. She's the one who noticed. Okay, so pace of play on the LPGA and the PGA Tour. They're similar but not. It's PGA Tour, and I think it has to do with the camera work that they're doing. You don't notice that the guys are playing slow, if they are, on the PGA Tour. Because they're doing this shot and that shot and that shot and this shot, and you know, they're keeping you moving around without having to get the guy going on time. On the LPGA, we don't have that kind of camera work, and it's just sometimes it's brutally slow. It's been commented on in several publications and, you know, online and to me. So I was wondering what you thought of that.
I think there's some truth to that. They're both hideously slow, and nobody's at this point thinking the men are somehow not just as bad. But I think you are correct. There are times where, because the production of a LPGA event is maybe not quite as elaborate. You're right. It's seen, but. I mean, the U.S. Open was a disaster. I guess it was a positive. They broke 6 hours the first 2 days, but it was, it was caused. To answer your question, there is a slight difference between the men and the women. But the women are now starting to have the same problem in the men, and that is that when most of the field can reach the par fives and two and maybe a drivable par four that wasn't drivable back when I wrote that book, that just throws everything out of whack. And so you're seeing that now more and more in the women's game, especially as they've kind of changed their course setup philosophy, which I think is showing this week and some of the griping about the setup at the women's PGA that's so hard. They've gone the last couple of years to a lot easier setups. They want more birdies. That's fine, whatever. But it's meant now that the women are having some of the same issues that the men with backing up on these holes, and those are killers. And then obviously the big difference, Danielle, with the men is that they're spending, depending on the course, anywhere from 5 to 25 minutes walking back to new tees. And so they just simply add time there on top of all the other stuff, fast greens, not playing ready golf, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a giant mess. I wrote about it in the book. It's there's not one solution, particularly when the green speeds are a part of the equation, which they are most, at least I'd say many of the weeks, we get into geeky stuff, but Poana greens tend to make everybody mark every putt, even if they're perfect looking greens. So and you try to discuss it with players and it's just brutal. You know, you try to say, hey, you know, you could spend more time sitting by the pool reading a book every week or working out or whatever if we rolled the ball back and we got some holes back to where they're kind of in sync, and they just look at you like you're an alien.
Okay.
It's a mess.
It's a shame. You know, I just see people kind of not wanting to watch golf on television. And
well, think of it's worse in person. I mean, television masks it, but in person, it's excruciating.
Oh, dear. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Now back to what you said about the brutal conditions on the PGA Tour for the men's tournament. It was, the U.S. Open was brutal. The rain, the mud, the muck, And I thought it was really cool that you said, you know, kudos to the people who are going to give money back to everyone who slogged their way through the conditions. Wasn't that the case?
Yeah, the USGA offered a refund. I don't think they had any takers for Saturday, although I heard from a few people that it was a good thing they offered it because it was a bad experience. Yeah, they had to close off some crossways and things, but a great gesture. It's the kind of thing we don't – I mean, it's the kind of thing they do at the Masters, but all the other golf organizations tend to not do something that generous. And
yes.
But those people in Pittsburgh, they're tough. They don't look too They don't want to take a handout like that, but good for the USGA for thinking of it.
Yeah, it was. And what we don't see or don't realize, the women in Texas are dealing with hideous heat and strong wind, right? So it seems to us that, gosh, you know, couldn't they pick it up? Well, they're probably exhausted by the heat alone.
Yeah, I mean, some of it is simply you just don't need to be moving too quickly. If you're going to be out there and you're stuck, don't waste energy in that kind of relentless heat. And then, yeah, they added the wind yesterday, and it's a major, so they're setting it up tough. And like I said, the LPGA Tour's gone in they reacted to a story, I think, by Beth Ann Nichols mostly, and some players that we need to have more birdies. I get that, but it's, if you read some of the player quotes, they're in a little bit of shock this week. They're getting tough hole locations on Thursday, and so that hasn't helped either. But it's a major, so the PGA is giving them a good test.
Yeah, exactly. Here's an example of something Jeff Shackelford has written in Oakmont. Reliably spawns varying degrees of cruel chaos. For most of a dreary Sunday at Henry Fowne's Inland Links, the 10th U.S. Open played at the storied club appeared on track for first ballot entry into the boondoggle adjacent majors club. Where did you come up with boondoggle adjacent majors club?
I probably a second glass of wine when I was putting the newsletter to bed.
That's magnificent. I mean, just reading what you write was wonderful. But was most wonderful about that tournament was J.J. Spaun winning. That was fantastic. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, he really saved the whole week because Sunday with the weather and how things were. You know, it's the kind of U.S. Open that they predicted they'd have. It's not my favorite kind of thing where you just feel like whoever was last to not crash wins and just emerges from the smoke. And the USGA's always liked that, and they for whatever reason, that's what they wanted, Oakmont. But, boy, it was looking like a kind of a disaster there on Sunday and whether they should have even been playing the course. And so to have him come in at 32 on the back nine and birdie the last two holes and make that putt that we'll see forever.
Uh-huh.
It was, he won out and won the championship and like I said, kind of saved them from, a Monday playoff with Robert McIntyre would have been, I just wouldn't have had quite the same feeling that you left with at the end.
Yes, absolutely. As you write, Spaun donated a pair of jaw-dropping closing hole shots for future USGA Museum consideration and is destined to join the greatest in championship lore. That really does sum it up. And it was a great close, and everybody was thrilled for him. It really was wonderful. Now, there are two things happening, one on the LPGA and one on the PGA Tour, and I don't know what the deal is, why they're happening so close together. The new PGA Tour commissioner is Brian Rolapp, and the new LPGA commissioner is Craig Kesler. Why at the same time are they having new commissioners?
It's just coincidence. Huh? I don't believe Rolapp's title yet is commissioner.
Okay.
But essentially, he is going to take over for Jay Monahan. They're calling him CEO. I think it's more business related. They might hire a commissioner, but they're moving it appears, to a for-profit model, which is going to be interesting to see how the sponsors react. But, yeah, and then the LPGA just took a long time to find somebody. But, you know, he was somebody who was up for the job at the PGA of America CEO job. So, you know, we'll see. I don't know much about him, but like I said, he was thought to be the successor to Seth Waugh at some point, but he was passed over, and I'm sure he'll bring a lot of energy to the job. And maybe having two people come in at the same time like this is a good thing, kind of a clean slate situation, because they do have some things to talk about between the two tours.
Yeah, that would be good, like getting their schedules sort of.
Yeah.
So they don't step on each other's toes. Yeah.
And that's complicated too, as you know. But I know people think that it's sexist, but I just think the women should try to finish sometimes on a Saturday or a Monday and do some things that so they're not competing head to head television wise. I don't get it. I've never gotten it, and same with the Champions Tour and even Liv, them in there. I mean, we've had a few Saturdays or Sundays recently where we're all four playing at the same time. And you're like, what are you doing?
Exactly. It's happening today. And, you know, you go to one. It's like, hello. The women
senior
are,
major, women's yes. major, and a signature tour, a signature thank, event on the tour. I mean,
thank you.
It's just nuts.
It is nuts. Yes. And now I still don't understand Brian Rolapp deciding to leave the NFL.
Well, that's an easy one. I mean, the job wasn't going to, the next promotion for him, Roger Goodell's job is not opening anytime soon. I mean, Roger Goodell, they're going to have to drag him out of there making $50 million a year. So, why not? If he likes golf, I don't know what he knows about golf, or it doesn't sound like much, but, you know, and some of the owners said, hey, there's this job. And then if Roger decides to retire, you can apply for that one when it opens up.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, there's a weird little world there, Danielle, with the CEOs. You know, they think they're in a club and it's a culture. And so getting a CEO job on his resume is, I guess, helps him gain entry into the CEO club. So it's just some weird stuff. But so far, I haven't been impressed at all with his start. You know, he's just talking growing the game and a lot of jargon and layered nonsense. So that's disappointing, but not shocking.
Truly. Yeah. Okay. Now, on the LPGA side, we're going to go back there. So we're going to have Craig Kesler, the chief operating officer at the PGA of America, going over to the LPGA to be their commissioner. So that's, you know, why is the LPGA hiring a new guy? What are they looking
for?
Well,
I think they're just looking for better direction. You know, the previous commissioner, it just she kept things going, but you just didn't feel like she had much. Yeah, I think the LPGA needs somebody like they had with Mike Wan. They need somebody who's willing to get out there and be in front of cameras and do interviews. And I mean, I requested 5 minutes with her on a Tuesday at the LPGA event here in LA, and was told no. And just wanted to meet and hear what her vision was. And that kind of happened with a lot of people. And I think they're missing this moment in women's sports when they were the biggest women's sport going for a long time, at least in terms of purses and television coverage. So I think taking advantage of this moment, trying to figure out, like you said, the schedule. You know, the women just travel. They have a brutal schedule. They actually have too many events now, maybe. I can't believe I'm saying that, but... so there are a lot of things there, and then their television situation's a mess, and then there's the usual stuff, just dealing with players and their opinions on things, and you know, and maybe a guy like him can somehow go to the players and go, look, we need to finish some events on Saturday, or more of the focus on TV or something, and maybe they'll listen to him, you know, just to having a fresh voice or whatever the topic is.
Yeah.
So I wish him well. It's an interesting time, and it'd also be nice if we got a little more consistency from the top players on the LPGA, and that would kind of help produce some more stars, really. Nelly's kind of their star at the moment, and after that, it's a little bit spread out.
Yeah, and Nelly is playing with a difficult neck. She's got a brace on or something.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like she shouldn't be playing. That's the only thing I thought of when I heard about that. It's like, okay, no wonder she's not at her best form. You know, that's tough. But she's expected.
Can't be good. I mean, she didn't even go to the Champions Dinner, and she likes those kinds of things. So that told me, and you know, it doesn't take much with a golfer in your neck to really just not. I mean, look what Jordan Spieth got, one of those upper back neck tweaks that. Yeah, it's kind of amazing, frankly. It doesn't happen more often because of whatever, new different beds you're sleeping in and pillows.
Yes.
And that's why Jack Nicklaus traveled with his own pillows. So, yeah, it's a tough sport to play when you even just the slightest little neck thing or shoulder thing or back thing. We all know it can make it very hard to perform.
Absolutely. All right. Speaking of performances, we have the 153rd Open at Royal Portrush. Rory McIlroy starts on Thursday, July 17th.
Yeah, soon.
Yes. This is exciting. Oh, is it pronounced Dunluce Links course in Northern Ireland?
Yeah, Dunluce, yeah.
Dunluce, okay. Are you going to be there?
I am going to be there. I can't wait. It's a beautiful part of the world, and it's a great way to end what's been a really good year in the majors.
Yeah, I'm really excited. What's your take on Rory?
Oh boy, I don't know. It is it's really strange stuff. You know, he got sick right at the Masters or right after, a bad cold, and I just kind of get the sense that. That it just put him on a weird path after this thing, and instead of being able to really enjoy it, and he has, but it knocked him down a little bit, and he was already exhausted from the week and everything he put into it, and he just hasn't recovered, and I think he's got, you know, for whatever reason they've decided to move into a new house in the middle of the major season in England, which I think is probably weird. And that's that. And moving is not, well, even everybody knows moving's stressful. And so there's that. And the stuff though with the press and everything is really weird. You know, if you were to ask me, I'd just go, why are you mad at press? Because the word got out about your driver. Well, that leak came from other people to the press, and it's news, and you know that. And You shouldn't be mad at people for reporting that. In fact, they were reporting it in a way that was justifying why he wasn't driving the ball well at Quail Hollow. So, you know, in a way it was, now, of course, some people took it as, well, then he played an illegal driver at the Masters. And that's been explained probably, but that isn't the case. But why he's mad at press and his weird performance on Saturday where you could just hear it in the tone, and it was just weird. And Sunday he was in a good mood. So I just see he looks a little tired to me. And I thought the way the majors are all close together, that after the Masters it could be a huge positive for him because you just ride the momentum and it all is over in mid-July. But it's kind of been the opposite. He just hasn't really recovered. And so we'll see, and he's playing this week, and he's playing the Scottish, and that doesn't actually make me very optimistic that he's going to get that nice little bit of rest that he probably
desperately.
I mean, he looks to me like somebody who needs to just shut the clubs in the closet for about a week or two and get reset.
Uh-huh, I agree. Now, if you're going to be at Royal Portrush, then the AIG Women's Open at Royal Porthcawl in Wales is July 30th, kind of 10 days out. Are you going to stick around for that?
I am not, no, but I will be watching and enjoying. Royal Porthcawl's been a great place for tournaments, so it's it's a perfect venue for the Women's Open, and it's going to be the biggest event Wales has ever hosted.
Yeah, this is, it's really exciting. It really is, and it's a great place to be. And the Walker Cup begins with the flag-raising ceremony from the United States and Great Britain and Ireland, September 6th and 7th, so those are going up against each other. You may recognize some of this from your newsletter. Yeah, right. And then there's the right.
Yes.
You'll be at the Ryder Cup, though, at Bethpage State Park, right?
Yeah, I'll do the. I'm doing the Walker Cup and the Ryder Cup. The Walker Cup's just upstate from me at Cypress Point, and we don't know who's going to be playing, but it doesn't really matter because it's Cypress Point, and there it's match play, and it should be fun. And the Ryder Cup is just going to be one giant mess. So, you know, but at least JJ Spahn is now going to be on the team, and. Ben Griffin's playing real well, but the Americans, I think, right now are still the underdog, if I had to look at the rosters and guess, but still a ways away on that.
Okay. All right. Well, golly, I'm so jealous.
Well, yeah, that could be a little. Don't be jealous about the Ryder Cup. That one's going to be a circus.
Well, you know, I wish you had time to be on the show to talk about that circus. You know, we'll see how your schedule works out, and maybe you can.
Yes,
because
it's a ways off still.
Yes, it is. But you're a busy man, and the best place to find your newsletter that you bring out so beautifully. Where should they go?
Oh, just go to Google and search Jeff with a G, G-E-O-F-F, and golf, and it'll come up, since a lot of people don't want to spell quadrilateral. But that works, too. And it's out there. It's on Substack. It's in the sports section, and should be pretty easy to find.
Yeah, it's great. It's one of the best. And you were working really hard the last month, so I enjoyed every one of your releases. That's what I call them. Another
well, thank
Jeff.
You.
Yes, absolutely. Jeff Shackelford, author. Is it 13 or 11? Okay.
13.
11.
That's, yeah.
Why do they say 13 on online? Author of 11 books, publisher of The Quadrilateral, a year-round newsletter from one of golf's last independent voices devoted to all things Grand Slam and the best cup events and everything else. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Danielle. Take care.
Aloha. We're going to come back. We're going to do a little bit of Inside Concert Golf Partners. Coming up is Forrest Richardson, the past president of the American Society of Golf Course Architects. And we're going to wrap it up with Ron Syrek. Stay with us. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club.
PGA Junior League is a fun team golf experience for kids that the entire family can enjoy.
Boys and girls learn the game from PGA and LPGA professionals and have a great time with friends.
Find your team and get ready for a fun and exciting PGA Junior League season.
I want to see you out playing in your jersey and having fun. Visit PGAJuniorLeague.com.
All right, first off, it's Aloha Power's Red Hot Honda EU 2200 generator sale. We have specials in every size, and you get $200 off your Honda EU 2200 generator. So now it's only $10.99. Plus, there's a free extended warranty. That's worth another $250. If you need power on your job, out in the field, keep your lights on and your equipment running. You need Aloha Power's Red Hot Honda EU 2200 generator sale. Get your Honda generator today. You want them? Yeah, we've got them. You know it's hurricane season. Just started, and the state says, be prepared.
Hey, Mark Rolfing here. The First Tee Hawaii is a nonprofit organization that helps kids build character, confidence, and life skills through golf. And we need volunteers like you to coach our next generation of golfers. No matter your skill level, our free coach training gives you tools to mentor kids. We have locations on all the islands, and enrollment is open now for our Level 1 Coach Certification. Call 808-500-1515.
Hoipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore has reopened to rave reviews. Come play our newly renovated greens. Bring the family, invite some friends. When you stand on that tee box, see that view, you'll know why Hoipu Bay makes any day special. Come, join the aloha at Hoipu Bay, where golf is played. Call 808-742-8711. Your tee time is waiting.
Here's the local rule sign. Keep it in the fairway. It speeds up play. Now, back to Danielle Tucker.
Forrest Richardson, past president, American Society of Golf Course Architects, a golf course architect based in Phoenix. Forrest Richardson's work covers 30 years, 20 states, 8 countries. He's created new courses for resorts, private clubs, daily fee, municipal clients. He's also carved a reputation for thoughtful restoration of classic courses. He led a restoration of Mira Vista, and that's a country club in El Cerrito, California, which remains the only solo design of Robert Hunter, who later went on to handle work across California for Alistair McKenzie. Welcome into the clubhouse, Forrest.
Well, good morning. Aloha.
Aloha.
Nice to hear your voice.
It's good to hear you. And tell me, I mean, you've earned honors, several honors and citations from Golf Digest, Golf Magazine, Golf Week, Golf Inc. Two of your golf courses have been included in Golf Week's top 25 municipal courses in the United States. When you're doing work for, let's say, a private country club, and you're doing work for a municipality that wants a nice golf course, those are two kind of different entities, aren't they? Or do you do the same thing for both?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think that in golf today, we're starting to see a movement to every golfer really wanting to have fun. And I think it used to be that private club experiences were fully different from municipal golf or resort golf. But I think we're seeing a more of a inclusivity, if you will. I think golfers today, I'm a firm believer in scoring success. I mean, I don't want golfers to necessarily come off the course and feel like they were, you know, beaten up. That's a different type of golf.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's maybe what we saw at Oakmont here last week.
Yes.
But I think that today, even though there are differences certainly between a private project and a municipal project that's, you know, supposed to welcome everyone, whether you're 6 years old or 86 years old, I think that today people want to have fun when they play the game. And you and I have talked about this before. They also are looking for opportunities to not spend 5 hours necessarily all the time. You know, they're looking to play shorter courses or nine holes. And that's really, I think, what we see is the trend in the game and the design today.
I like that. I got this quote from you, I think. A golf course is a story to be unfolded. For the greatest enjoyment, there should be anticipation, intrigue, the occasional chase scene, and even a pinch of humor.
Well, I think that humor is, you know, some of the greatest golf designs in the world, some of the greatest holes are ones that are very interesting and memorable. I mean, we'll look at Oakmont last week. I mean, we had some incredibly interesting golf holes. You can disagree whether a 300-yard par 3 is good or bad for the game.
Yes.
But there's no doubt about it. It was entertaining for the average golfer to see the elite players of the world pull out driver on a par 3. And that's, I think that's where the humor might come in occasionally. And then, you know, you look at holes like Pete Dye's 17th at TPC at Sawgrass. I mean, that hole certainly has a little bit of irony and humor to it.
And then, you know, you take your pick. I mean, everyone sees different things. But I think that golf courses are a story, and the ones we remember are the ones like Pebble Beach and Oakmont and these courses that we see, the old course at St. Andrews, certainly, and then, you know, we're going to be in Ireland in a few weeks for the Open, the British Open, and I think you're going to see holes that are different, unique, and when you're watching them on television, I think that a lot of people are going, wow, I've never seen anything like that. And yeah, that's what's kind of cool to me about the design of the game, is trying to create something that's interesting, memorable, doesn't look like everything else, doesn't play like everything else. That's really the key, I think.
Yeah, golf holes have personalities, is what you wrote. At least they should, to create a course full of similar looking and similar playing holes is a takeaway, one of the greatest aspects of the game. And the other thing you wrote too is, Forrest, you're the author of four books on golf course architecture, including Routing the Golf Course and Bunkers, Pits, and Other Hazards. Would you recommend an average golfer to read your books?
Well, yeah, I mean, of course, what author wouldn't want their books, you know, to be read?
Of course, yes.
I think that maybe I would say this, is there are little excerpts and bits and pieces of what I've written that I think would be fun for people. You know, I wrote quite extensively about Jack Snyder, you know, who had a tremendous presence in the islands. He lived on Maui for, I think, 4 years. His daughters went to school there. Jack was my mentor. And I know we've talked about this before, but his design at Wailea, at what is now no longer there, the Orange Course, was always, I mean, I can't tell you, Danielle, how many times I'll be on a plane coming to the islands or leaving the islands or on an inter-island flight, and I'll be sitting next to someone. We start talking about golf. They find out a little bit about me, and then I mention Jack Snyder and Wailea, and it is inevitable that person will say, the Orange Course, oh man, that was my favorite golf course on Maui. I'm so sad to see it not there anymore. And I think that what I've written about Jack in my career, there are a lot of fun stories that I think any golfer would want to read about.
Oh, nice. I like that. Yeah, and golf course designers' job is to get players to come back to the course time after time. The Orange Course did that.
It did. It was, you know, Jack passed away in 2005, but I think, you know, all you need to know about Jack's love for the islands was that his Arizona license plate was a personalized plate, said Wailea.
Oh, no.
And, you know, I have a picture of his Wailea license plate, and it just gives me a big smile and chills every time I see that photo, because he just felt so passionately about Hawaii, and he, as you know, and many of your listeners probably know, Jack was the first land planner, golf course architect to go down that dirt road from Kihei to what is now Wailea and envision a golf course and a community. And so definitely his spirit lives on in the islands, whether it's full-time there, because, you know, he started his career in Pittsburgh at Oakmont, actually, in the Oakmont area. And then besides living in the islands, he was here in Arizona for most of his career.
Didn't he get Oakmont in shape for the PGA Championship in 51?
He did, yeah. He was brought in. The course was not in good shape. I know the members won't want to hear that on your radio program, but there were some problems post-World War II, and Oakmont had fallen into a little bit of, you know,
sure,
say just a little bit of deferred maintenance. Jack was brought in to get it in shape. And then one of the other things he did, which was in the news here during leading up to the Open and during the Open, is he was the one who planted over 1,000 trees. And he didn't do it maliciously to hurt the strategy of the golf course or anything like that. The members were so concerned in the early 50s about the Pennsylvania Turnpike being widened and going through the golf course, which is, of course, now, you know, it's actually a landmark of Oakmont, right? That the major highway splits the course into two pieces. But Jack was told to plant thousands of trees to help shield the turnpike from the clubhouse and especially the upper hills, the ones that go up to the clubhouse. And he told me many times, he said, Forrest, someday they're going to rip out a lot of those trees because they planted way too many of them. And he said, I begged them not to, you know, make me plant that many, but I did. And here we are, you know, 70 some years later. And now, you know, we see Oakmont without most of the trees.
Yes. In fact, that whole conversation about the trees coming out, going in, was not as enlightening a couple weeks back, because we didn't know why all those trees had been planted in the first place. And now we understand why they were planted, to sort of shield the course in a way, or the golfers in a way, from having that view of the highway.
Right, and it turned out to be not that bad a view, because the highway engineers and planners, you know, they depressed the turnpike way down to the level of the railroad, and they built these huge retaining walls, you know, to kind of make the highway basically down in, you know, a basement-like setting. But at the same time, I mean, you know, trees are, I think, you know, when you look at trees, they're a larger form of turf grass and grass, really. They're all plants. They don't live forever. And sometimes we do get too many on a golf course, and we have to think about, you know, the realities of growing grass, which needs light. And it needs air circulation. Can't have too much shade. And then, of course, you know, in the islands, the kiawe trees, you know, the roots can get very, very invasive, and they can ruin irrigation systems and creep into greens and areas and bunkers and things like that. So trees are a blessing because they're beautiful. They're certainly iconic, but they're also, they need to be balanced with the realities of not only playing the game, but enjoying the views and also letting the superintendent be able to manage the golf course for good quality. So, you know, I see sometimes, not just in the islands, but, you know, many, many courses that have views to mountains or lakes or oceans or rivers or whatever. It's so unfortunate sometimes to see the trees hiding those views.
Mm.
And again, it's a balance. We don't want to get rid of trees maybe just without thought, of course, but we want to get rid of them creatively and appropriately so that we're managing that landscape.
Yeah. That's what's so amazing about golf course architects and the men and women who work on golf courses after the architect leaves to make sure everything is taken care of, and it's such good work that they do. It just amazes me how much time and energy and hours and hours in the day, from early morning to early evening, they're always working hard to keep it in perfect condition. It's truly, we're blessed to have people with that kind of dedication. So did Mr. Snyder also design Ka'anapali South, Wailea Blue Course, Wailea Orange, as we mentioned? Did he also do the Volcano Country Club?
He did. In fact, you know, kind of when I got up this morning, I opened a file of archive drawings, and I'm looking right now at a plan of what was called back then Royal Volcano Golf and Country Club.
Oh, wow.
Which Jack worked on in the 1960s. He built the second nine and designed and integrated the holes that went, you know, you remember the holes went back to, there were three holes, as I remember, that were built in 1921. And there was a wonderful lady on the Big Island named Laura Kennedy, who was quite a philanthropist and believed just passionately about gardens and open spaces and giving people opportunities for recreation and enjoyment. And she was the one that, I think it was in 1946, which was a tough year, you know. I mean, that was a difficult time. for America or Hawaii. But she saw that the full plans for 18 holes were realized, but I think they only built nine, as I remember the history. And then in 1968, Jack came over and built the second nine. And he always used to say, what I remember about Volcano, and someday I hope to be able to help the Kamehameha schools and the locals in the area of Volcano, I hope to be able to help restore that course. But Jack always said one of the most interesting things. He said, Forrest, it can rain cats and dogs and pour on one nine while the other nine is dry as a bone. and in his entire career, he would always bring that up when we were someplace meeting with a new owner about the rainfall and how much, you know, rain they would get at what times of the year. And he would bring up the story of Volcano, that 1-9 was, you know, the sort of the leeward side of the course was totally different than the 9 that was kind of more prone to rainforest type, you know, rains. But yeah, Jack had a tremendous passion for Volcano. Again, think of it, in 1968, there weren't a lot of people venturing over to that side of the Big Island. No. And if it were, they didn't really have golf on their mind. You know what I mean? That wasn't necessarily what they were there for. But when Jack created the 18-hole layout, it kind of put Volcano on the map, and it became just a beloved course, and I think still is today.
It is, absolutely. Forrest Richardson, you've got to be on the show more often. This has been fascinating. Forrest is principal golf course architect and president, past president, American Society of Golf Course Architects. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us in the clubhouse.
I'd love to do it. And again, great hearing your voice, and enjoy summer over there. My best to you, Danielle.
My best to you. Thank you, Forrest. Aloha. We're going to come back, and after we take a break and take care of everything and the people who make the show possible. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
When Sears opened here more than 60 years ago, who made all their signs? The Honolulu Sign Company, to 1724 Hart Street off Waikamila Road on the Everside. They do building marquees, letter signs and lighted signs, parking and tow signs of every kind, OSHA compliant signs, custom signs of all types. Call 847-4047. Licensed and insured Honolulu Sign, serving Hawaii since 1939, where quality and service have not been forgotten. Call 847-4047 now.
Poipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore. Share our home with Need a Gift for that special someone? Tired of giving fruit baskets you know are getting recycled? Give a Poipu Bay Golf Gift Certificate. Whether it's a birthday, business, or anniversary, here's the one gift that is always the right size and the perfect date. Just give us a call and it will be waiting for you to pick up or mailed to your office. There may even be time to sneak in a nine. Call us for the perfect gift, where great golf is played every day at Poipu Bay on the Garden Isle.
Hey, Mark Rolfing here. The First Tee Hawaii is a nonprofit organization that helps kids build character, confidence, and life skills through golf. And we need volunteers like you to coach our next generation of golfers. No matter your skill level, our free coach training gives you tools to mentor kids. We have locations on all the islands, and enrollment is open now for our Level 1 coach certification. Call 808-500-1515.
Off a tree, hit a rock, and bounce next to the pin. That's my kind of golf. Now, back to Danielle Tucker on The Golf Club.
Features, concert golf partners, they feature all the strategic initiatives to enhance member experiences. We've got so much going on. Drive revenue growth, oversee capital improvement, across the company's portfolio of private golf clubs nationwide. His leadership is instrumental in aligning operational strategies with broader business objectives. Aaron Straub, I think he's going to be with us, Senior Vice President of Operations, Concert Golf Partners. Welcome into the clubhouse.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm quite excited to be on your show. I appreciate it.
Okay. I, just to give everybody an idea about Concert Golf and what it's all about, what is Concert Golf Partners and what's the purpose?
Well, the purpose of Concert Golf has grown over the years. We certainly started as a vision for the golf industry that we could show club owners that there was a different and better way to attract members. I know it's hard to remember now, but there was a time when it was difficult in the country club industry, and we kind of started on that premise, to show people that there was a way to have a great club experience, to reinvest money for continued capital projects, both those annoying ones that we need, the AC repairs and things, but also the fun ones we want, new bunkers and green renovations and all that kind of stuff. So it's been a wonderful journey. We started small with one club and recently just acquired our 39th over the course of 13, 14 years. So it's been a wonderful journey.
And your latest acquisition, the club at New Seabury on Cape Cod, what a location. The views of the ocean, the architecture, it's a movie setting. Plus, there's the two championship golf courses. There's the Ocean Course, the Dunes Course, designed by William Mitchell in 1962, renovated by none other than Reese Jones, Greg Merfield, and Bruce Hepner. I mean, wow, what an acquisition. Now, when you come in and decide to purchase one of these fantastic clubs, what happens with the membership?
Well, every club's a little different. In the case of New Seabury, our goal there is just to go from strength to strength. That club has been, as you mentioned, and in many other ways, carefully curated and stewarded through the course of decades. Francis, we met, said it was the Pebble Beach of the East.
Yes.
And we're certainly very aware of that kind of heritage and that responsibility, honestly. So our first goal with the members is to bring them into the camp, bring them under the tent, and start talking about ways that we can partner together to make an absolutely bright future for that property. And I agree with everything you said. As a Boston boy, personally, it's super exciting to have such a crown jewel on the Upper Cape to call a concert property, and we really look forward to working with the members on site to just creating everything that a club of that stature deserves and needs.
Yeah, it's no exaggeration. One of the world's finest beachfront country clubs. The club at New Seabury, just 90 minutes outside of Boston, Upper Cape near Hyannis, with views of Martha's Vineyard, 9 holes on the ocean course, sweeping views of Nantucket Sound. I saw the pictures and I went, oh, wow, I want to live there. I don't want to go anywhere. I just want to be there. Oh,
don't
my goodness.
Blame me at all.
Yeah, So is this the largest purchase Concert has ever made?
Yes, absolutely. Certainly the largest purchase we've made, and one that really made sense, though, even despite that, just based on its bright future, wonderful history, and an amazing location and members. We couldn't be happier. It makes a lot of sense for us, and it's going to make a lot of sense for that property as well. We really look forward to working with that membership and bringing it into the future.
Now, why do you want to buy all these properties and manage them? It seems like an awful big job.
It is. I suppose anything is. But when you have such a love for the golf industry and a love for the game, And you see, you know, as I said before, our initial entry into the industry was born of hope that this industry could be one that was sustaining and growing for many decades and generations to come. And it's just so wonderful to see it becoming such a popular place for families and golf enthusiasts and the zeitgeist kind of surrounding golf and its interest with the newer generations is something that, for those of us who have been in the industry a long time, would only hope for, say, 10 years ago. So it really has been almost a fruition of an initial hope and desire for the founders of Concert Golf that's come true to see the industry just kind of grow and be such a staple in American family life.
Wow. Do you know which one was the first acquisition?
Yes, Heathrow Country Club in Lake Mary, Florida, right outside of Orlando.
And how did it come to be that you why was it for sale, and why was it purchased by you folks?
Well, I mean, kind of indicating some of the different times that golf experienced in years past, it was owned by a developer who was having some financial trouble. The course and the clubhouse, the amenities were all kind of struggling under the weight of lack of investment and really kind of worried about their future. The owner, you know, didn't know what to do about it. He was facing bankruptcy.
Wow.
Peter Nanula and Susan Dunovan, our two founders, had worked together in past years and kind of teamed up with this idea and vision that Peter brought to the table and Susan so artfully executed. And Heathrow was the first one, and Susan happened to live in Orlando at that time, just coincidentally, and we were able to kind of create that vision and that plan in practice over those first couple of years, stabilize it, resuscitate it, and it continues to go from strength to strength. We've owned that club for 14 years and have invested over, well, my numbers are a little rough, but I think just about $5 million in capital in the last 4 years on, you know, new top tracer technology, brand new greens on the course, and many other upgrades and amenities that are, you know, very, very important for a club to grow and continue. And we never lose sight of that, no matter how long a property has been within our portfolio. It is a new property every year that deserves a new look and new investment.
That's wonderful. I mean, just some of the TPC, is it Jasna Palana in Princeton?
Mm-hmm. Golf, Jasna Palana, yeah.
Yeah, a golf club of the Everglades in Naples, the club at Spurwing in Boise, the club at Pasadena in Monterey, California. Seems like Concert, really, you're getting some of the high-end clubs.
Yes.
Kudos to you guys.
Oh, well, thank you. And I think it's a function of our hard work and effort to continue raising the bar. And we really are looking forward to continuing to evolve and create stability and growth within the golf industry. That was our original purpose, and we're still committed to it all these years later.
It's why, yeah, it's obvious. Commitment is there. Concert is known for trying to maintain the traditions of the club. So you don't come in and, you know, this is what you're going to do now.
Right.
And you reinvest in each of the clubs. How does that work?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I have seen many companies take that strategy, you know, go in and then kind of, you know, lecture the members as to what's going to happen. We actually take the reverse tack. We go in and start talking to the members and try to find out what they want to do. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it always aligns seamlessly, but in many instances, we take our direction from the people who know and love their property the best.
Nice.
And I think that's a wise way to do it. We come in with institutional knowledge and a lot of strength of operation, but what we never have, and we're very conscious of this and we discuss this openly, is we do not have local knowledge. We do not have that knowledge of that club, that those essential pieces and purposes that will make that club go from strength to strength. And we always want to listen before we speak.
Nice. And another one, I got to go back to New Seabury because, you know, that's just like, you know, that's like a book. That's like a, when you look at the property and where it sits and the views, you feel like you're going into a storybook. You know, there's got to be a long history behind this property. There's got to be lots of intrigue amongst the people who were there. It could be a movie. So you are more than just a club. Why?
I liken it more to a private resort. I know that's not necessarily a category in hospitality, but I'd like to apply it to New Seabury in the sense that there is a fantastic beach club, multiple food and beverage amenities, fitness center, aquatics, you name it, it is right there. And so certainly as we've seen the industry develop into more of a family place than it is a golf course focused environment, as all clubs are, but they are also multi-family, you know, multi-generational family places to rest, relax, recuperate. I think one of the, this was many months ago when we were first talking about New Seabury and I was looking through some of the rosters, what struck me more than anything and struck me in a very positive way was that there are many generations of families that maintain membership at New Seabury. Grandparents, parents, children, all with their own memberships, and in many cases have been members for 50, 60 years with just an absolute commitment to a gorgeous part of the world. And they gather there, you know, every year together and celebrate family. And as you well described beautifully, a tremendous setting.
Yeah. Yeah. the area, of course, Martha's Vineyard and that whole area, the 10 most enchanting small towns in the Northeast. In addition to that, New Seabury delivers members and guests exclusive access to lots of beautiful things. And I was just taken by the Ocean Course and the Dunes Course, designed in 62 and then renovated by Reese Jones, Greg Muirfield, and most recently, Bruce Heppner. You know, it seems strange when Reese Jones comes in, you'd think he'd, you know, everything would be done. Yeah. Greg Muirfield and Bruce Heppner, how did they change, or did they just, what were the changes that were made?
Well, I think really those two gentlemen focused on some of the little details, some of the upgrades and pieces, that idea of a course being a living thing. We certainly saw that with Oakmont in very dramatic ways. I mean, I remember watching Oakmont U.S. Opens as a child and thinking they were being played through the forest. And you watched Oakmont these days, and it's obviously more of a Lynx Parkland-style course. And that's one of the beauties of golf. So those gentlemen came in and just tweaked some of the bunker lines, looked at adding some tee box options, certainly a couple options for, you know, juniors and lady players to make the course a little more accessible for all while respecting the genius of the original design, as well as Mr. Jones's attempt to just keep it very relevant for the next 50 years. I think it was done so thoughtfully, and I really love kind of reviewing the approach taken with these folks as they practice their art on the course.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Okay, and this you know, if you can't get a picture in your mind, it's annually ranked, New Seabury is annually ranked as Cape Cod Life Magazine's best location for nuptials. That means it's a wedding destination, I think.
Yes,
that says a lot. It says a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is there something I didn't give you an opportunity to say that you wanted to, Aaron?
Oh, no, I'll just answer the nuptials thing, because I was just blown, when you said that, I was just blown away by the wedding venue kind of overlooking the beach and then overlooking the sound, and then you can see Martha's Vineyard in the distance. It's pretty
yes.
perfect to get married.
Yes.
So, sorry, I was swept away for a moment.
That's all right. I'm pretty much swept away just looking at the photos, you know. And so if you get a chance to, what is your website? Let me see. Do I have your, I'm not sure that I, is there any place where they could find all this information?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We have a great website listing all of our clubs and ways to get in touch with us. Some of what we do is www.concertgolfpartners.com.
Concertgolfpartners.com. Really simple.
Yep.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry I cut you off. What was your other comment?
No, I was just going to say you can find individual links to all of the properties if you wanted to explore any in more detail.
Excellent. Fantastic. That's exactly. And then maybe there's some pictures, too.
Lots of pictures.
Oh, a real pleasure meeting you. Aaron Straub, Senior Vice President of Operation Concert Golf Partners. Did I get that right?
You sure did. And thank you very much. It was such a joy talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you. A joy talking with you, taking me on a journey. Aloha.
Aloha.
We're going to come back. Ron Cyrak, award-winning writer, author of the Vision 54 trilogy, of course, with Lynn Marriott and Pia Nielsen. We'll have him on right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
I'm Paul Morikawa, 2020 PGA Champion. In every golf journey, some goals can feel like an uphill climb, even intimidating, especially if you're on your own. But in the game of golf, helping hands are all around us. Whether you dream of a championship or you're just trying to make golf your thing, PGA coaches have industry-leading knowledge, guidance, and support to help you take the next step. Just like my PGA coach, Rick Sessinghaus, has always done for me. Wherever your golf journey is headed, a PGA coach can get you there. Find your PGA coach at pga.com/coach.
You know, it's Aloha Power's Red Hot Honda EU 2200 generator sale. And we have specials every size. $200 off your Honda EU 2200 generator. That's $10.99 now. So plus the free extended warranty, that's worth another $250. And you need power on your job site. You need it if you're way out in the middle of the boonies, you know, in a field. You got to keep your machines running, your lights on, your equipment running. Get your Honda generator today. You want them? We got them. Hurricane season just started. And the state, of course, encouraging everyone to be prepared. And we ship off island. So new shipments arrive daily and they go out. We're open Monday through Saturday. Monday through Saturday. The only day we're closed is Sunday. Aloha Power Equipment, Evile, next to the Costco gas station. And in Waipahu, great signage, by the way. Aloha Power Equipment, we put power at your fingertips.
If you want more consistency and more distance in your golf swing, schedule a session with Coach Claude Brousseau, PGA Master and Director of Player Development at the Wailea Golf Academy. He's ranked number one teacher in Hawaii by Golf Digest since 2019 and three-time PGA Teacher of the Year. Claude will simplify your game and make you better. Scratch golfer or just beginning, call Claude at 808-856-9458 or by email, claudeforbestgolf@gmail.com. That's 808-856-9458. And have more fun playing golf.
KORL, Waianae, Honolulu.
Man, I thought that was in the cup. It bounced out. I've been robbed. Now, back to the clubhouse with Danielle Tucker.
Ron Cyrak, award-winning writer, PGA of America Lifetime Achievement and Journalism Award recipient, LPGA Media Excellence Award, member of the Western Pennsylvania Golf Association Hall of Fame, and Golf Channel contributor. Ron Cyrak has worked more than 150 major golf championships, considered to be the only writer to cover all of the men's and women's major championships in the same year. And he's done that three times. I can't say that enough. Welcome into the clubhouse, Ron.
Danielle, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. And this is adorable. His first job in golf was filling the pop cooler at Castle Hills Golf Course in Newcastle when he was 12. So how did you get hooked up with Castle Hills at 12?
And I was really good at filling that pop cooler. The golf course was about a mile away from my house. My dad was a steel worker. He played in a shop league there, and I started playing there on a junior membership, and had a chance to. I started out filling the pop cooler, and then I graduated to bringing the carts up from the cart barn.
Wow. Wow. That must have been cool. Were they electric? Did they run?
Because I would take them down at night and put them on the battery, the charger. Uh-huh. So they'd charge them up for the next day.
That's a wonderful way to get hooked on golf.
Okay. I had a local guy named Arnold Palmer, who was doing some big things when I was a kid. So that was an inspiration to play the game.
Wow. You knew Arnold Palmer when you were 12? I'm tongue-tied.
I saw him, but I remember him coming in to do a clinic at our local country club, which I wasn't a member of, but we were able to go and watch, and I remember watching him come in and fly his little single engine Cessna plane into Newcastle Airport and come out he was an awesome guy.
Wow. He is. I mean, was, yes. He'll always be, you know, this really jovial, great sense of humor. I mean,
he's the greatest Grow the Game program golf's ever had.
That is correct.
I mean, in the neck of the woods where I'm from, he won his first tournament in 1955. He won his first Masters in 1958. By 1960, every steel mill in western Pennsylvania had a nine-hole golf league, and it was because of Arnold. He took the game out of the country club, and he brought it to the masses.
That's
awesome. Yep.
That's awesome. You know, and when you met him, it felt like you were friends forever. I mean, that's how he just kind of, like, there was a warmth about him that just all of a sudden you were part of the crew. of his crew.
He would meet a total stranger at Bay Hill when he was living there. He'd meet a total stranger and he'd say, on the practice range, and he'd say, "Hi, I'm Arnold Palmer." And of course, everybody knew, but that's the kind of guy he was. He was not going to assume anything.
Yes. That's why he was so wonderful. He was so down to earth. I mean, he was, oh my goodness. Why does Ron Cyrak like covering the women's game? Maya Stark.
You might have saw my tweet from this week to prop that question. Is that, after J.J. Spahn won the U.S. Open, Maya Stark, who won the U.S. Women's Open at Erin Hills, I was there covering that, she tweets out, "I didn't cry when I won the U.S. Women's Open, but I did cry when J.J. Spahn won the U.S. Open because I know his story, I know what he's been through." And I just thought that sort of openness about emotion was just really, really special. And I love covering the women's game because they talk to you. You know, there's no sense of entitlement because they're still scraping to they're still making one-fifth the money the men are making. Put it that way.
True. But I was really impressed. What is it? Now, I heard $12 million is the purse. Is that the correct number?
Yeah.
$12 million.
It's getting up there, and the fact that Mike Wann, the former LPGA commissioner, became the CEO of the USGA, I think his ultimate goal is to have the prize money for the U.S. Open and the Women's U.S. Open be equal. Uh-huh. And it's not there yet, but he's increased the prize money for the Women's U.S. Open enormously, and he's only been CEO for about 3 years now. So I think that, and the other great thing that he's done is he created the U.S. National Junior Team, which is, they have training facilities in Pinehurst, and they're developing junior golfers through an organized plan program in the way a lot of other countries are doing it. And I think that that's a huge, huge advance for golf in this country.
So do you think golf is on the, on the fast track?
Since golf was in a recession as a participatory sport for about 20 years. One of the odd things about the Tiger Woods era is Tiger grew the game as a spectator sport, but not necessarily as a participatory sport. And then the Great Recession came, and that hurt it even more. But then COVID came along. COVID was a huge boost to golf because people realized it was a sport that you could play and you could social distance. And then so they started doing it, and they realized all the other great things about golf, like it's a social sport. You can talk to the people you're playing with. And all the statistics from the National Golf Foundation say that the COVID spike is holding. And probably even more importantly, 60% of the growth is women. And, so all of a sudden, it used to be only 15% of the golfers in the United States were women, and now it's significantly more than that. And that's a huge, huge boom for the golf, for the game going forward.
Yeah. I mean, just today alone at Volcano Golf Club on Hawaii Island, the Big Island, Pele's girls, they're out playing today. And they've got their own name, this group of women. And the nurses golf too. That's another group. And they're playing on Kauai, at Poipu Bay, I think it is. Yes. And it's really great to see. We get a lot of people telling us what is their little group's name. They all have, there's the Weekend Warriors or the Wind Warriors. And usually they're guys. But now we're getting a lot of girls that are coming out and saying, yeah, we're the Weekend Warriors too. And we're the Pele's girls. And it really has done wonderful things for women to find out just how much fun it can be on a golf course. You can talk and nobody's listening, just the four of you.
One of my favorite names for a women's league is Wine and Nine.
Yes. It is. It's true.
Yeah.
They aren't having a real great time at in Texas, where they're...
At Frisco, yeah.
Yes. I mean, they are just sweating. It's hot. It's windy. And I brought this up earlier in the show, and I just want your take on it. Pace of play on the LPGA, it just seems slow. Is it my imagination?
I think pace of play is slow everywhere, both on the PGA Tour and on the LPGA. And I think that the tours are finally going to start to deal with it because they are getting blowback from the people who write the checks, which is the TV networks. The TV networks don't like, there was a round in the U.S. Open. They missed the TV window by 45 minutes. Now, fortunately, they could leave NBC and kick it over to Golf Channel because Comcast owns both of them. But the TV networks now want to reliably say to their local affiliates, golf's going off the air at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock. And when it runs over by a half an hour, by 40 minutes, that creates a problem for them. So the tours are getting significant pressure from the TV networks to do something about pace of play.
Excellent. That is excellent, because if we can't put a shot clock on them, it's hard because the guys have a bigger, they have more cameras, the PGA Tour. They can distract us while we're watching and show us this and show us that and go back to the player when he's finally ready to play, But they don't have that kind of luxury on the LPGA Tour, I don't think. It just seems that way, at least.
No, you're right. There's far less network TV coverage. It's primarily Golf Channel. It's not entirely at all the same situation.
Yeah.
But they are going to be hearing, they are going to be hearing from those from the networks to like speed it the heck up, you know.
Yes. Okay, so it's moving day today. 30-mile-per-hour wind in Texas, unbelievably difficult heat, and Thailand's Gino Tidikul was on top of the
Gino
world.
Gino Tidikul.
Yes. Yep. Tell us about her. She's amazing.
You know, she could be really the next breakout star. In fact, I sort of was expecting this year that she and Nelly Korda would have a battle for Player of the Year. She's an extremely talented golfer, and when people get to know her, they're really going to like her because she's really smart. She's really funny, and she had a very good year last year, and I think she's going to build on it this year. Frisco is playing like a major championship venue. The last I looked, there were only three or four people under par there, and the top two were Gino Tidikul and Minji Lee. You know, Minji Lee's a multiple major championship winner, so it's defined. One of the tests of a golf course is how good of a leaderboard does it produce, and this golf course is producing a very good leaderboard, and it's turning out to be a very challenging test. And you know, they're eventually going to have the men's PGA there, and this is sort of its inaugural tryout as a major championship venue, and it seems to be holding up really brilliantly as a major championship venue.
Absolutely. It's the KPMG Women's PGA Championship, $12 million purse, Frisco, Texas. And USA's Lexi Thompson is doing really good, isn't she?
You know, last year at the U.S. Women's Open, I wrote the story that Lexi Thompson had retired. she told us that. I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden she announced I'm retiring and started playing great golf. She may challenge the record that I have for who I've written the retirement story for the most are Nancy Lopez and Arnold Palmer. They both retired multiple times and then came back. I think Lexi, you know, part of it was just getting, since she was 12 years old, she's lived in the spotlight. She had to grow up in the spotlight. And I think by saying that retirement thing and scaling her schedule back a little bit, she's taken some of that pressure off herself. And she does have enormous physical skills, no question.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, she's hot. And so is Nelly Korda. But, you know, she's two over with eight others. And she's playing with a neck brace. This gives me pause. Do you have any background on what happened? What's up with her neck?
Well, she's had that issue before. In fact, was it last year or the year before last? I think it was year before last. She had both blood clots and the neck issue, and they took some time away from her. But I was very, very impressed with what she did at the U.S. Women's Open because she's never played well in that tournament, and she fought her way to a second-place finish there.
Yes,
and I really thought, you know, that twice Nelly has had really big years, and then the next year fell flat. So this is like her chance to, like, not let that happen again. You know, she had a great, great year last year. She's going to. Can she build on that? Can she build success on it? I'm very optimistic that she can because I was impressed with what I saw at the U.S. Women's Open, and I'm impressed with what I'm seeing her from this week. Yeah. One of the great things that great players do is learn how to shoot decent scores and win when they don't have their best game going for them. And she seems to be maturing in that way.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. I just worry, you know, playing golf with a neck brace on, you know, it's like your neck is so delicate. And I just want her to be good. Okay. So that she can play for as long as possible. Lydia Ko had a brutal day. Boy, four over. There were a lot of others four over, but, you know, watching her strike the ball. Did you see that when she was going for the green and all of a sudden the ball just seemed to go on its own with its own decision? I don't know. I felt so bad for her.
Lydia struggles on long courses. She's not a long ball hitter. You know, she can't motor it out there with it. And a few years ago, when her coach tried to get her to be able to hit it farther, she went into a slump that lasted 2 or 3 years.
Oh.
And now she's decided to go back to the way she used to play, used to hit the ball when she was a teenager and winning all those tournaments. But long golf courses are hard for her. She's hitting hybrids into greens where other players are hitting irons into them. And, you know, that's a disadvantage.
Yeah, absolutely. She's got such great personality. She's so good for the game. So seven over, plus seven, made the cut. Rose Zhang, Arya Chittanagarn, Andrea Lee, Gabriella Ruffles, Yuko Sasso, Grace Kim, all amongst that plus seven group that just made it in. That's an incredible group of women right there.
Yeah, you know, and sometimes in major championships, when you make the cut, pretty much everybody who makes the cut is still in it, because it just takes one round on the weekend, on Saturday, you know, go out and shoot a 65, and you're going to jump over a whole lot of people. And particularly on a golf course, it's really difficult the way Frisco is playing now. Nobody's going to break away from the pack. Nobody's going to go crazy low and create distance with the rest of the field. So you've got a bunched up group there. So I've always liked that about the majors, that making that cut puts you in contention.
Yeah, we saw it. You know, JJ Spahn.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
You know, I don't think a lot of people had their money on JJ, and he sure pulled it off in elegant, beautiful style. It was just really amazing to see. So, by the way, 16 players missed the cut by one stroke. They were eight over. Hawaii's Allison Korpus was amongst that group. And that was, yeah, you know, Allison is always out there fighting through it. And I want her to get in there. get in it.
Yeah, she's been struggling a little bit, but everything about her I like, you know, and you know that I've been high on her from the day that she first got on tour.
Yeah.
And she's another one of those people who not only has a lot of game, but she has a lot of personality, and she's really smart. And she's somebody who's, as a writer, you love to talk to, because she's going to give you real insight into what's going on.
Yeah. Exactly. She's a real mensch, and she's wonderful. And she's from Hawaii, so we definitely want her inside. Yeah. Ron Syrak, thank you so much for being inside the clubhouse. It's always, your insight is fantastic, and really, really appreciate you. Thank you.
Always a pleasure to be on with you. Talk to you down the road, my friend.
Thank you. Ron Syrak, award-winning writer, PGA of America Lifetime Achievement in Journalism Award recipient, and LPGA Media Excellence Award as well. All right, that just about wraps it up for us. We've got, I missed this completely. I was mostly sunny. Is this forecast for today? Scattered showers, Windward and Mauka. It's been like that. Yeah, boy, we need the rain. A high between 84 and 89. That's why we need the rain. Everything's going brown on us. Easterly winds are 15 to 20. And if you're going to go play tomorrow, partly cloudy, breezy. That's when the winds are going to pick up to easterlies, 15 to 25. Gusts possibly to 30. And on the Big Island, we're going to have windward, partly sunny skies today, scattered showers. On the leeward side, mostly sunny, isolated showers in the afternoon. Breezy, too, the high between 84 and 89, and the easterlies are 15 to 25 miles per hour. Saturday night, we'll have mostly cloudy, lots of rain on the Big Island, and partly cloudy on Sunday. Windward and scattered showers during the day, too. Big Island really needs rain. Okay, so we're going to close the show. I thank you so much for being here with me. And I want to thank the people who make the show possible. It's Aloha Power's Red Hot Honda EU 2200 generator sale. Get your Honda EU 2200 generator at $1,099. This puppy's going to take care of you for a long time. Plus, you get the free 2-year warranty. That's worth $250. Hurricane season's here. Get prepared. Get yours today. Aloha Power Equipment. They're open Monday through Saturday. Evile, right next to the Costco gas station. You can't help but see them because of that big, beautiful sign. And in Waipahu on Farrington Highway, they're on the Makai side of the road, so going east. The Aloha Section PGA, teach your children to play golf. Get them on the golf course. It's the gift that lasts forever for self, for health, for friendship and family. Go golf. And the Honolulu Sign Company, branding banks and shopping centers and businesses, hotels since 1939. They can't find you without a sign. All right. Thank you for your mama. And may you hit the sweet spot every time. My name's Danielle Tucker. This is the Golf Club.
You've been listening to the award-winning Golf Club radio show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. Tune in next week, and we'll tee it up together only on the Golf Club.
Copyright 2025.